throwing a leg over the ball just quiet.
Oh, he might be out of play for a little while.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Baldcast, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Quick roll call, Brenton Speed.
Present.
Andy Harper.
Also present.
Murray Shaw, present as well. What a week of comebacks it's been. It started with Liverpool a week ago, then Spurs in the second half against Ajax, then Adelaide finding something from nowhere against Perth, and finally on Sunday in the A-League, just before kick-off at Jubilee Stadium, the biggest comeback of all, David Carney's hairline, which has gone... and had completely gone 12 months ago and is now absolutely thriving. Yeah, yeah. And speaking of hairlines, Brenton Speed, how are you?
Any tips from Carney on how he got that happening?
I would like to talk to him, whether he's using some sort of growth formula or something like that. It was outstanding.
It got mentioned straight away as a back announce as well on the panel.
Did it?
Yeah,
did it?
Yeah. You're not the only one who picked that up. But yeah. What was your question?
Are you... The question was, are you well?
No, I'm not really. I've been crook as a crook in the guts, crook in the throat and all that for the last week, but I'm soldiering on.
I attended the Dolan Warren Awards on Monday night and my highlight of the night, it was always going to be my highlight, was watching Brenton Speed present two awards to the two referees of the year in the W League and the A League. We all saw the Sean Evans. We saw the... interaction between the two of you. Take us behind the scenes, Speedy. Tell the listener something about the night that they wouldn't have seen if they were watching it on TV.
Well, we're all in the green room. Adam Peacock, Simon Hill, Tara Rushton, and then we got shuffled backstage, and then Tara appeared in front of me, and I felt like I was backstage, as she put it, at an ABBA concert. What an outfit she had on.
Outstanding.
It was absolutely superb. So a bit of banter backstage with the likes of Tara and Simon and company, and then the big reveal. And Sean Evans gets the grand final.
You happy with that?
Bit of a surprise for mine.
Don't get your Brazilies too early here.
No?
No.
I can't carry it over and get straight into it?
I'll tell you a story from my side of the Nolan Warrens.
And then... I obviously got to hand over the trophies to Sean Evans.
Mm.
And then...
How was the handshake?
That was fine.
Yeah, cordial?
Yeah, yep, but I couldn't track him down on the way out. He was gone.
Good. Now, from my side of things, Speedy, obviously I was in the audience, and it's the first time I've ever been at an awards night with seat warmers. So, seat warmers, people who, like at the Academy Awards, they fill in when someone else goes out to make sure that the venue looks at full capacity. So there was all these people walking around as seat warmers. But the good thing about them was they tried to sort of keep in character to the audience. So awards were being announced and there was two seat warmers in front of me and they were going, yeah, good decision, yeah, good decision, yes, well done, good decision.
Really?
They were playing seat warmers in character.
Wow.
It was absolutely remarkable.
And I then went backstage again and then had to come out. And I had a ticket that said 30A on it.
Yep.
So during one of the wonderful tape pieces put together by FFA with help from Fox Sports, no doubt, I wandered to my 30A. I was directed there to 30A. Who's sitting in 30A? Cooper Cronk.
Oh, dear.
So I said, Cooper, what doing? And then there was an FFA seat warmer next to him in 29A, Ricardo Pacioni, who said, no, Speedy, you sit here.
Right.
So... Pacioni took off from his seat warmer capacity, even though he's very high up at the FFA and should have had a more prominent seat than being kicked out by Speed in 30A/29A.
Little click minus one.
Yep. Anyway, I sat next to Cooper Cronk for the second year in a row.
Is that right?
At the FFA Awards. What a champion he is. And during a video montage of Matt Mackay, one of the retirees.
Yes, I know this story.
He goes, I played soccer with him when I was in under eights.
Yep.
And a little known yarn that Cooper Cronk and Matt Mackay are in the same team.
Similar statures, you'd have to say.
Yeah. He's a great fella, Cooper Cronk, so we watched the whole awards show
Speedy,
together.
Keep going now that you've told us all about that. The Brazalis.
The Brazalis.
And I should point out, surely a mention for Sean Evans, surely a mention for Mike Dean, which I'm sure you saw that footage in the UK of him cheering on Tranmere Rovers, and surely a mention of Alex King, who did a great job on the weekend.
Exactly.
Go.
Right, Brazalis. Alex King, 3 votes.
Wow.
Should be refereeing the grand final.
Little clip.
Little clip for Ben Wilson, who makes that decision. He's the head of the referees. I spoke to Ben, and, he's got
He would have loved that conversation.
Some plenty of full-timers.
He would have seen you coming and going, oh, God, here we go.
He's got full-timers on the roster, and Alex King is not one of those. Mm. Chris Beef and Sean Evans are.
Right.
So maybe
go your full-time.
That comes into the thinking.
Yep.
But I thought all the referees, all four games, were very good.
Yep.
I gave votes last week. They're all in the positive.
Yep.
And this week they're in the positive again. Chris Beef, even though a couple of inadvertent touches.
Yep.
Little clip minus one for those, but yep. He still gets two votes. A good performance from Beefy, who I got a little hello Speedy out of as he kept on walking and no shake of hands. So that was interesting. He once told me that he doesn't listen to my commentary or anything, but maybe the word has gotten through that I've been a little critical.
I don't read it. I don't read the newspapers.
Down the years,
I don't listen to anything.
But Mike Dean from the Wirral, carrying on like a pelican
yep.
at the Tranmere Rovers game, just trying to lead the cheer squad and looking like an absolute muppet.
Yep.
Big clip, minus three.
Minus three, only three.
Yeah. And Martin Atkinson for costing Liverpool the title.
Oh, here we go.
We dropped about 7 points with Atkinson at the whistle.
How many?
And we dropped about 13 the whole season. So Martin Atkinson, retirement, please. Straight swap Jared Gillett in. Big clip, minus
Gillett,
five.
Gillett rhymes with Fillett, replaces yeah. Atkinson. Harps, let's whip straight into it. Players you enjoyed watching over the past 7 days, and you've gone with one from that incredible match last Friday night over at HBF Park in Perth, with Perth Glory getting the chocolates in the end over Adelaide.
Yeah, amazing game. Plenty of players to choose from this week. But I'm going for Ryan Kidder, and I'm doing that because I thought he started the game pretty flat. And that's to be understood, I guess, after the exertions against Melbourne City. And there was always going to be the risk that some or many Adelaide players would fall into that category. Just amazing how they turned it around. And I've got to give massive credit to Ryan Kiddo for delivering the cross for Michael Moroney to equalise for 3-3 and scoring himself with his right foot, no less, to take it to extra time. I just think it was a great mini comeback from Ryan, who was competitive all game. It wasn't as though he played badly, but his final contributions weren't that polished until the whips were cracking. And you've got to admire people who can finish so strongly and so decisively like that. Well done to Ryan.
The other player you mentioned there too, Michael Moroney, you could almost have thrown him in as well just for the sheer determination to get
in
the end of it.
Well, it was a toss-up between me. I've lauded Michael Moroney a lot through his career, particularly the back half of this year, so I thought I'd give someone else some love. Huh?
And Ryan Kiddo, definitely an out-and-out left-footer.
Yeah, hard to tell.
Yeah, I always associated him with the right footer until he went to left back.
Which is what we were talking about the other day with Harrison Delbridge. It's always a good sign of a player if you can't tell what foot he is.
Yeah.
And your player, Speedy, you went for two from your game, Sydney versus Perth.
Yeah, I could almost bracket the entire front four in, and I think this is why Sydney FC are nearly favourites for the grand final, because we've been waiting for them to all be fit and firing. And Steve Corica, you've got to credit the man management that he has displayed to get Milos Ninkovic, Alex Brosk, Adam Lafondra and Seam de Jong all ready to go. And they're all purring the other night against the Melbourne Victory. And also Ufuk Talay's little battle plan on the set pieces, the way that he was able to drop it and put the pressure on Lawrence Thomas and get that early goal. But the front four, Seam de Jong, Milos Ninkovic, Alex Brosk, to be playing football like that, turning players inside out and finishing, was just sensational to watch.
And I will go with someone from that game as well. And similarly, you could pick this bloke every single week, and that's Alex Wilkinson, who will play in his fifth grand final this Sunday. He joins Michael Theo, Bessart Brisher, Mark Bridge and Lee Broxham as players to have achieved that feat. And once again, he has dragged a player along with him in terms of Aaron Calver, who now looks a very, very solid central defender thanks to Alex Wilkinson basically telling him what to do, which he's done right throughout his career with a series of players who have gone on to bigger and better things and certainly earning bigger dollars than they do here in the A-League. It often said to me that maybe Alex Wilkinson should be getting 20% of the future earnings of people like Matthew German and maybe even Jordy Boyce and maybe even Trent Sainsbury. So congratulations to Alex Wilkinson, who had Ola Toivonen, and we talked about that matchup 7 days ago, and you certainly would have given that one to Wilkinson. That was always going to be crucial to the game, and Wilkinson had Toivonen, I wouldn't say in his pocket, but he certainly had him under control. And we mentioned it 7 days ago that the last time those two came up against each other, Toivonen sort of got under the skin of Wilkinson, but it was a very, very composed performance, as I'm sure it will be this Sunday at Optus Stadium. Let's stay on the A-League Harps, and before we get into a quick look back on those two semi-finals, speaking to you during the week, you're proposing a slightly, if it can have as such, a slightly radical change to the makeup of the final series.
Well, proposing.
Give us your idea so that we can smash it down.
Yes. And you'd be sitting there with a baseball bat waiting for this. But I'm going to reframe the way you've put this. I'm not necessarily proposing this as an outcome, but I'm certainly proposing the discussion because I think it's worth having, and that is to have the semi-finals as a home and away. Not the entire home final series. The elimination finals, I propose, to stay as one-offs. The semi-finals to go home and away, and then the grand final a one-off. And there's a few reasons for that. I think the finals format that the A-League has adopted in the last few years is pretty close to bang on. It's really exciting. My only thing is it might be over just that fraction too quickly. And one way to augment it slightly is to embellish the semi-final series round with a home and away to give home fans an extra chance at both clubs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I can only re-emphasise that I don't feel particularly strongly about this, but I do think it's worth thinking about. How can we, is it worth improving? Is the final series that we've got now something that can be improved? And if so, might this be one way of doing it?
It can't be improved on. It's as good as it gets. The top two get a week off. It's elimination finals all the way. The drama that comes with that. Second legs, away goals, not away goals, whatever. Doesn't add to it at all. Well done, the FFA, for the final system they adopted a few years back. And it's brought the drama. And the top two do get a massive advantage, as was displayed on the weekend.
And that would add to the final series. So that'd be a four-week final series. Is that what you're proposing, Hubs?
Yeah, just that, just an extra game.
And we're probably going to have a slightly longer season next year because of buys, etc. So we've actually be extending the season, which is fine. My only view is that the first leg of those games tend to be a bit drab and probably wouldn't attract the fans as much, simply because here in Australia, maybe different to the rest of the world, we always like a match that has something riding on it.
Yeah.
And in the first leg, there's nothing really riding on it. So are fans going to turn up knowing that it's not really over at the end of the 90 minutes?
All worthy considerations. I don't think you can necessarily say an extra game's going to be less dramatic, Speedy. I mean, we just look at what's happened in the Champions League this weekend. That was completely dramatic.
And we should point out, too, that 1v2 is playing in the grand final this season, which is pretty much what you want, and it's happened quite regularly over the last...
As Speedy pointed out in his expert call on the weekend, that bizarrely, statistically, the only team guaranteed to make the grand final is the second place team.
Yeah. Who seems to make it all the time.
Yeah. Now, I'm not proposing a system that actually protects Team 1 and 2. I subscribe to what Speedy says. You know, you get your week off, that could easily be deemed enough, and the team that finishes first gets entry into Asia. So they've got their tickets, right? I'm with you on that. The season finishes really quickly. I guess I'm being a bit... I'm just wanting more football and finding out a way that we might be able to get it. The thing, and the point you make, Muzz, about the first game in a home and away series in our context can often, or sometimes, be deemed as a drab affair. And history would, in our context, probably support that view. But if it's your last chance to see your team, and most of the teams play on an interstate basis, unless you get the intercity derby for the finals, you would like to think that might go against, a one-team town not turning up in the first leg because all the action's in the second league.
So in your proposal, we've got away goals?
No, I prefer aggregates myself. I don't necessarily subscribe to the away goals rule particularly. I'm happy with just aggregate.
Well, it's a good idea, Harps, but you've been outvoted 2-1, so it's not happening.
And we check with the Wanderers and it's 3-1.
There you go. You can't resist, Speedy. All right, let's go back to the two games from last weekend. Melbourne Victory bowed out, a heavy loss, 6-1 to Sydney. All the talk out of that game is what went wrong with the Melbourne victory. And a lot of talk. You all right there, Harps?
What's gone wrong at the Harps?
What's gone wrong with Andy Harper? Have you dropped the phone,
Harps? I thought that was your gut, Speedy.
Oh. And a lot of the talk from the Melbourne Victory fans is it time for Kevin Muscat to move on, which I find extraordinary given that he won the comp last year. What's your takeaway from that game, Harps?
Indescribably poor performance from Melbourne Victory. And I thought we saw 2 minutes in the reason why Matt Acton's been playing so much regularly. Yep. They're obviously sus about Lawrence Thomas's either fitness or focus in the closing stages of the season. And that set the whole set of wheels in motion on the weekend. It was an incredible performance from a pedigreed club. They know how to win these games. I mean, how many times have they managed their way through to the ultimate? And to see it crumble so was just remarkable. And I guess massive credit to Stevie Corriger. I'm so happy for the success he's enjoyed this year, and it was a stunning performance by his team. But how much of Melbourne's performance contributed to Sydney looking great? Because that should maybe frame how we think the grand final might pan out. Kevin Muscat at Melbourne Victory, well, he's going to have to move on at some point. It's been a club pretty much in reflection of his persona since the A-League started, first now as a player, then through the coaching.
Which ranks. Also equates to being very successful.
Totally. He's been incredibly successful. I think there's no doubt he's an outstanding coach. Equally, he's got a lot more coaching to do. Does he actually envisage spending his entire coaching career at Melbourne Victory?
I would doubt
that. The answer to that is no. And is he likely to go somewhere else in the A-League?
No.
Hard to imagine. So it's got to be overseas, and that's where he wants to go. It might be time. I don't know. It's going to be a massive transition for that football club when it is time for Kevin to move on, whether it's now or in the nearer future.
Speedy, talk in the paper today that all the Victory foreign players, and that includes Costa Barbarousis and Jorg Niedermeyer, might be moved on in the off-season as Melbourne Victory look for a complete overhaul. Is it an overreaction, or do you look at a team now that does need to basically start again?
I think the depth of the benches on the weekend, have a look at it. Kujana, Jad, De Silva, Caceres, Retre for Sydney FC. Melbourne Victory had Lesiotis, Kenny Athieu, Storm Rue and Carl Valeri in his final game in the A-League. Sydney FC had a massive advantage on the benches there, and it actually stood out to me pre-game. So we're not talking about foreigners there. We're talking about depth in the respective clubs, although there is a foreigner there on the Sydney FC bench. So I think, Melbourne Victory are behind the eight ball against one of their chief rivals in terms of depth at the club. And that was exposed on the weekend. I actually raised the topic of Kevin Muscat in the call. Could it be his final game as an A-League coach? Just sniffing the breeze a little bit. And you talk about where he could go overseas, maybe go to a Millwall where he has a great association and become an assistant coach maybe, or does he want to go in and get a head coach role straight away? It could be difficult, but maybe now is the time. I mean, what more has he got left to do at the Melbourne Victory after the championship success he's had as a coach already?
Yep.
Yeah, I think on the foreigners, I think apart from Costa, none of them have really aimed up.
All the Toivonen.
Toivonen has, yeah, but I mean, of course he has. Keisuke's going, as he said. Baena, I wouldn't be standing in his way. Niedermeyer started the season poorly, finished the season poorly. Unfortunately for him and Melbourne Victory, had a really promising run towards the finals with Donaghy. They looked really strong, but Niedermeyer was very poor on the weekend. I wouldn't be standing in his way. So I think that the basic clear out of the foreigners is pretty an unremarkable response, really, on balance.
Right, the other semi-final, what a game that was. Adelaide and Perth Glory. Full credit to Adelaide because you thought that they were done and dusted. You were behind the microphone, Harps. Adelaide can certainly hold their head up high. Marco Kurtz leaves us. Plenty of people wondering why. In fact, I think 7 days ago we talked about just that when Melbourne City announced that Warren Joyce would be moving on.
Mm. Yeah, well, it was just a Herculean performance by Adelaide and you can't but admire them. They started the game very well. In fact, they dominated the opening 20-25 minutes, but they fell foul of what's been their problem all season, someone to stick the ball in the back of the net at the other end of the at the end of their good work and good pressure and good intensity. Strangely enough, they didn't have trouble finding goals late in the game when they were very desperate.
And also when Diawara came on.
Well, I mean, that's the key. That has been the key. They're short two players, Adelaide, on this roster. They're short a number 10 and they're short a striker. But they've got everything else and piles of spirit. Jeez, it was a great game to watch. And Perth, back into the first half, when they scored their first goal, it came basically against the run of play. But from that point on, they looked like the team that everyone's admired all season, and it was going to be Perth by how much. And then they got the second goal and still looked to be cruising, and Adelaide just come from the clouds. It was incredible. And there was a feeling watching, even when it was 2-1 and Perth, I think the score was 2-1, that Chris Economides had that breakaway, and instead of playing the ball into Castro in the box, running in on goal, probably would have finished in all probability. Chris Economides, great player, great season, but I think Erd decided to have a shot himself and hit it almost outside the boundaries even of the shed, and you know, that was the chance to put him away. And Adelaide just don't need a second offering like this. We've seen time and time again this season. It was just a remarkable comeback and a stunning penalty shootout. I'm very happy that in the tumult that is a penalty shootout, none of the players actually missed their penalties. The keeper had to save him on the keeper.
Yeah,
great.
There was quite a lot of talk after that. And there was a player manager on Twitter, I won't name him, saying that, you know, it shows that Australians have poor technique because the penalties were poor. I thought that was an absolute massive overreaction. It'd be like saying that if Tiger Woods misses a shot from 1 yard on the 18th, like a putt from 1 yard on the 18th, he's therefore a bad golfer. I mean, pressure does things to people. Castro missed a penalty. We know he's a good player. Isaias missed a penalty. No, he's a player. Good player. Michel Platini missed a penalty in a World Cup. Someone going to tell me he's a bad player.
Baggio's
a bad player as well. I mean, penalties, it's pressure
situation.
People
are on a hair trigger, Muzz.
And no one missed. They're all saved.
Yeah, that's right. They're all
at the same height to the same side was the criticism someone labelled.
Well, they weren't actually. Reddy went to his right a couple of times, but he also saved one to his left. Yeah. So.
And Australian goalkeepers, historically, some of the best in the world. Mm-hmm. And we saw Izzo and Reddy. And Reddy has really found something this season. And he also put one away. But you see Reddy's reaction going, how many have I got to save here before one of you blokes sticks one away? Yeah, the technique on the penalties was interesting. And the way the goalkeepers
Just on the last penalty, right? Yeah. So Chianese's last penalty, which I wouldn't say was an amazing, unsavable penalty, but the keeper went the wrong way and he scores.
Yeah.
So therefore it's a great penalty.
Yeah.
You know, if Goodwin, his Panenka, if the goalkeeper stands still and catches it, do we all go, that's a terrible penalty with bad technique? Now we're all raving about what a great penalty it was.
Yeah, but there was no disguise. A lot of those penalties that were saved, there was no disguise. It was a real telegraphing of the way that you're going, and that's why
it looks at now, Speedy. Yeah. It looks at now.
But I would have said the same with Chianese, and he scores.
Yeah, it looks at now when the keeper either guesses or reads or prepares right. He knows that the player's going to go that way, so he goes. And, of course, it looks like it's bad technique. If you miss the target, it's bad technique. If you don't hit it firmly enough or in the direction, it's bad technique. But the guys basically did a great job. They were just outdone by keepers guessing the right way. It was great drama. I mean, that's trite criticism. That's people just wanting to take a sledgehammer for the sake of it.
And goalkeepers now allowed to come off their line, aren't they? They've got to start with a foot on the line.
Has that rule been introduced already?
It's sort of been... I feel like it's over the last year or so. It's
definitely coming in. I just wasn't sure whether
used to have to go along your line.
Yeah, you did. You can't come forward.
Whereas now they were making all the saves about a metre and a half off their line, weren't they?
Yeah.
Because you're shutting down the angle. So
I'll need to check.
Obviously worked that on training, really starting with a foot on the line and then coming forward and shutting down that angle. It's very difficult to score a penalty if they pick the right way.
And, Harps, last week we praised Marco Kurtz. I'm going to give him, in the speed parlance, a little clip today because I sort of get the feeling that Marco Kurtz is a very good coach in terms of looking after his players and what happens on the field. But I get the feeling he also doesn't really care too much about what happens off the field. He's very much this is my job, looking after the players, and everything else can sort of work around me. And I would say that part of coaching... 80% is probably looking after your players, and the other 20% is looking after the media, it's looking after your chairman, it's looking after this, that and the other, all your vital stakeholders, and you can't just focus on one. And I think if Marco Kurtz goes away from Australia thinking, why, I don't have a job, and we know that he was looked at by several other clubs, part of it is probably because he needs to work a little bit harder on that other 20%, look, getting on with your chairman, looking after the media, because the way he carried on at full time, trying to blame this, that and the other, for what end the penalties were going to be taken from, which he should have known because it's been the same way for about the 14 years that the A-League has operated, and Adelaide got into a grand final in a penalty shootout that was taken in front of their home fans. And suggestions that we should have a, you know, coin toss to determine what end penalties are taken at. Well, I can't wait for the away team to win that coin toss in Gosford and we start taking the penalties in front of two sauce bottles and three palm trees and have everyone around the world going, what sort of competition is this? Look at that penalty shootout. There's no fans there. So the fact that he didn't know what was going on there because it obviously wasn't communicated to him by the football department, or more importantly, he wasn't listening if it was, I just think Marco Kurtz needs to go away and start thinking about the fact that maybe looking after some factors outside just his team is just as important part of coaching. And I do remember someone telling me that they went to a coaches conference in Asia once, and the first thing the head of this AFC coaching confederation said to all these coaches who had gathered in the room was, the most important part of coaching is making sure you get on with your chairman, because he's the one that's going to determine whether you've got a job in the future. It's not, you know, 4-3-2-1s or what, you know, formations, et cetera, et cetera. That a lot of it is man management. I think that's where Marco Kurtz fails. Is that a good clip?
That's a big clip. What about...
almost he fails the no dickhead policy. There you go, Speedy.
What about the camera person that had to stare him down and eventually backtrack?
We're not taking the audio, Marco. We just want to see you talking to your troops.
But you We've can been hear doing the audio. It for years. You can hear the audio.
I don't think there was any audio on that camera. Play on?
Yeah, there was. I was hearing it.
Were you? Okay. Yeah,
you could hear Marco.
Well, that wasn't what we were interested in. We were just trying to build the drama.
Yeah.
So I thought, his reaction to the camera was a bit over the top, to be honest. Although I don't know if something else provoked that. But he's certainly made a name for being a very energetic, shall we say, and passionate person inside the technical area. Has received his share of yellow cards and. You're obviously of a very strident view, Muzz, that he's clearly crossed a line with his behaviour.
Well, I'll put it this way. I know for a fact that a couple of other clubs in the A-League were looking at him as a coach for next season. They all were warned against him because of his behaviour. And I always see good overseas coaches come to Australia and I think to myself, geez, this bloke's a good coach. How come he can't get a gig in Germany? Mm. And I would say we might have seen exactly why. He's difficult to get on with and people don't want to have a bar of him.
Wow. 131873, Murray. Really making a statement.
Righto, let's move on. The Dolan Warren Awards we've touched on quickly. No surprises with Roy Krishna taking out the award. I thought that was fantastic.
Well, Castro won our award and it was 3-2-1, so everyone thought Castro was going to win.
Who came second and third? This was going to be my point. Who came second and third in the Johnny Warren medal, Speedy?
Isaias.
And?
Neil Kilkenny.
Yeah, so Castro not even in the top three, or Milos Ninkovic in the top three.
Kilkenny stealing votes off Castro.
Yeah, there you go.
And, well, hang on, you've got to,
and clearly the players think that Isaias is a very, very good defensive midfielder.
The players.
Maybe ahead of, maybe even ahead of Brandon O'Neill
players,
this season.
I voted in the Johnny Warren.
So do the players.
Do they?
Yeah.
When?
I think isn't it's after it, every round now, isn't it?
Isn't it all 3-2-1s?
It's players as well.
Is no, it? The players. Of course, Speedy, the players. This is a players' award, basically.
Okay.
But there is a...
Speedy thought it was his award.
No, I just thought I gave the 3-2-1s and that's all it was for that round, for that player. Is that right? No.
Actually, we should get some clarification before we start firing up, but I believe they've moved it from a solely a players... for various reasons, solely a players' award to get a panel that they know actually watches the games and digests all the games to provide extra input. We had the situation with and how the whole thing has evolved. Players would sit down at three rounds to go in the season and ask to vote on their player of the year.
Yeah, that's changed.
And that's changed because that was completely skewed to whoever players played against in the last weekend who scored a hat-trick against them.
Mm.
So then they brought it in a system of they voted three times through the season to try and get some more balance, and it's evolved further from then, trying to get, I think, a more robust outcome. I think one of the interesting things about these awards is that you've got no chance of winning the Johnny Warren medal if you're a defender. You've got little chance of winning the Joe Marsden medal if you're an attacker.
On grand final day?
Yeah, most of them are defenders. Really? I think in the 14 seasons, there might have been four or five attacking players have won the Marston medal.
That might say something about the way that grand finals are played too.
Yeah, totally.
Often very cagey, no one wanting to give an inch, therefore defenders
stand out. Yeah, totally. But how in 14 years have we never had a defender win the Johnny Warren medal?
Sure.
I think, like, the winning player got 31 votes, didn't they? Second and third equal second title on 29. Mm. So what are you saying? Like, when I gave 3-2-1s a couple of times throughout the season.
I think it's then averaged out over time.
The players give 3-2.
We're getting bogged down in the minutiae.
Remember last year we had the final five rounds and it was changing on the screen, three votes.
Yeah.
A la the Brownlow.
Yeah.
Hey, next year for the Brizalis, can we do the final five rounds, three clips?
M. Dean, three clips. The Julie Dolan Award went to Christine Nairn, which surprised many because everyone thought Sam Kerr would just walk up and accept that one. But, Speedy, you watched plenty of the W League this season. Christine Nairn was outstanding.
I might have said it on this podcast that I thought she was the best footballer in the W League, all-round footballer, Christine Nairn, and deservedly takes that gong. Every time I watched a Melbourne Victory game, I was just in awe of this lady playing for the Victory out of the United States, who only played two times for her country a decade ago as a teenager and remarkably hasn't played for the USA women's national team since then. But obviously, they're missing out on something there because there's not many better than Christine Nairn.
By the way, just going back to Adelaide quickly too, Gert-Jan Verbeek seems to be the man who's going to take over from Marco Kurtz, Dutch
Kim's
coach.
Kim's brother?
Don't think he's any relation. He has coached a couple of Aussies. I think James Holland and Brett Holman have both been coached by him, and I'm told that he's one of those fastidious coaches, loves looking at, you know, video, spends all his time away from the training ground just studying the opposition. So,
is Verbeek like the Smith?
Yeah, it's like speed in Holland. you know. All right, let's move on to the grand final. We cannot wait for this one on Sunday at what's going to be a packed out Optus Stadium in Perth. Interestingly, in the last third of the season, Speedy, Sydney and Perth have both earned 17 points out of 27, so in the last nine games, 1-5, drawn 2, lost 2. So you'd have to say, over the course of the of recent weeks, they are very evenly matched.
Yeah, and on what they did last weekend, as we described earlier, like, I tipped up Perth to win the Premier's Plate and the Championship pre-season, and I was very confident that that was going to occur until Sunday night at Kogra, because, as I mentioned, Sydney FC got those players together. Siem De Jong, we've been waiting for him to avoid injury and look cherry ripe this season. He's back.
Brosk into the starting side.
Mr. Month comes back from a heel at his age and plays like that. Unbelievable. Ninkovic is ready to go, and Adam Lafondra is going to stick the goals away. So now I think Sydney FC almost favourites for this game after the way Perth conceded those late goals as well. So Sydney FC will feel like if you put a bit of pressure on the Glory, they might be ready to crack.
Harps, what do you think went wrong with Perth? They look to be cruising against Adelaide. Is that just simply big game nerves?
Well, very possibly, Buzz, very possibly. But I think they sort of thought they were home, and that unwanted psychology starts to kick in. They started dropping, easing off. They were demonstrably dropping in defence, and Perth were just pushing them, giving them the territory, which enabled them to drop the ball into the danger zone and win those corners, crucially, to put Perth under pressure. And then it became a bit of a lottery. You couldn't say that Perth defended particularly badly. They had numbers in the box. They were trying to clear the ball, trying to attack the ball, and succeeded, basically. But a couple of bounces here and there, Diawara sticks his boot out for one, and Ryan Kiddo positioned himself beautifully off the pack to hit the second goal in. And I think that was a function of Perth just losing their intensity. Now, on Speedy's points about Sydney are very, very accurate. I think the point, however, before people start banking on Siem De Jong as being a lay-down mazair, I'm always nervous any time he gets near the ball because he's had such a shocking injury history, and he's had trouble this year as well. Fabulous player, has contributed, can decide the grand final if he can last the distance. But I wouldn't be hanging my hat on that one just yet. And the other thing about
probably Perth, a very hard surface too, I'd imagine, on Sunday. What do you
reckon? Yeah, I don't know that the surface is going to be great.
Buddy Franklin thing about, did his heel in there, famously. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perth is how quickly can Neil Kilkenny get back to his best? So he played wounded, there's no question. In my mind, he played wounded, maybe with some painkillers.
And Adelaide did a good job on him.
But, you know, Kilkenny is so imperious as a midfielder that a lot hinges on what he does. And when you compare his troubles on the weekend with the power shown by Brandon O'Neill, for argument's sake, then you would have to think if Kilkenny doesn't recover sufficiently in this last week up to the grand final, then it's going to be advantage Sydney on that basis, because they're going to find it really difficult, if Sydney are on fire, to resist the Sydney pressure. It's already worked for a couple of times this season for Sydney against Perth. It may be a bit of a bogey team in that sense, and that becomes accentuated if Kilkenny is not 100% fit.
Speedy, on one side you're going to have Milos Ninkovic. On the other side you're going to have Diego Castro. I mean, there's so many matchups right across the park. I mean, Diego Castro, we talked about those last nine rounds. He looks to be finding, as he seems to do every year, his best form at the end of the season. His last nine rounds, 4 goals, 6 assists in 9 games.
Yep, phenomenal talent. As we discussed earlier, he won the Alex Tobin Award, missed out on the Johnny Warren, but playing great football. Andy Keogh, you know, he's going to be the starter. Sometimes you rock up to a Perth game, Keogh sitting on the bench, but he'll be starting. Wilkinson and Calver, I don't think they're going to give Castro as much room. I think they're like, Wilkinson's the savvy defender. So does Castro score those goals that he did against Adelaide the other night against a Sky Blues defence? Andrew Redmayne, what an opportunity for him in goal.
I'll tell you an interesting matchup will be Ryan Grant versus Jason Davidson, because they'll both be trying to push each other back. They both love getting forward. Mm. So who wins that battle, do you say?
Yeah, the team have to get lopsided so Michael Zullo doesn't get forward. Mm. Who do you want to get forward more from Perth's perspective? Do you want Zullo, like a lot of teams seem to let Zullo cross at will, or do you want Ryan Grant to have an opportunity? That will be an interesting battle to see how it all matches up with that famed back three and the wing backs from Popovich.
We will get your tips for that a little bit later on. Let's quickly look at some of the other news over the past few days. Matilda's squad has been named for the World Cup in France next month. I'll go to you on this, Harps, because I know you've been a big Chidiac and Rolston fan, and they were the two notable omissions.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed. Happy Mary Fowler's in. Disappointed Lira Toby totally fell by the wayside. They're my glaring ones, but I'm not going to, if you're going to ask, I'm not going to answer who they should replace, because now that the team is picked,
yep,
I wish the girls all the very best, and I want to and get all the support they can. They're going to have hopefully a very successful time in France, but it's going to be very, very difficult. It's a very, very good squad, and it's always on the margins that you could argue, but certainly Chidiac and Rolston were two that I noticed not making the list, and there you go.
And to you, Speedy, I guess one of the headaches for Ante Milicic would have been what to do with Kaya Simon. She's been named in the squad. What do you make of that?
Not in the squad.
No.
She's an extra.
Yeah, she's in the train-on squad.
Yeah, so I don't think she'll get in the 23. He explained it very well yesterday. She's gone to the United States, picked up another injury, and sadly her body has let her down at a key time. So hopefully she can get right and get right back into that Olympics mix, or if someone goes down, maybe Kaya Simon gets a late shout. But I put it on the agenda, you know, a month ago about the left-back position, the depth chart there after Steph Catley. Does Elise Cowan-Knight go there if Catley can't play? Gemma Simon named in the squad again. How much opportunity was there for an Ali Green or Angie Beard to press for selection in that future Matildas program? I understand they've been training fringe players or future Matildas with Ivan Jolic and Gary Van Egmond to try and put themselves in the frame and improve their aerobic capacity and skill set. But it's pretty much the same squad that we thought it would be a month or two ago.
I like the nod to the future with the selection of someone like Kyra Cooney-Cross. You know, it's almost like the Theo Walcott of the squad, the Mark Milligan from the Socceroos in 2006, probably not likely to see a minute of playing time, but come along, enjoy the experience, and hopefully it'll benefit Australian football in 4 or 8 years' time.
Well, she's not in the 23 either. Her and Simon and
correct. Kirk, yeah, correct.
They're on the outside look, but they go to Turkey.
Yeah.
And they provide that extra outfield play, maybe for 11v11 matchups. Maybe that's part of the reason you bring an extra two along. But, she caught my eye a long time ago. Fantastic skill set that she has. Played with the Melbourne victory throughout the season and showed a little bit. And they obviously liked what they saw with her at under-19s level with the Matildas.
And if someone falls over in Turkey, metaphorically, and can't make it, people shouldn't assume that it's one of those two standby players who move straight in. And I reckon there'd be another clutch of girls who will be being kept on ice but away from Turkey, if you know what I mean. Because you look at the Men's World Cup, and was it Jamie McLaren who came in without being part of the squad at all as a last-minute call-up? So that could happen as well. Muzz, when do they have to name the final 23 for the tournament?
Off the top of my head, I mean, it's generally, what is it, 2 weeks before you play your opening game or 2 weeks before the first game of the...
Because you have that medical window, don't you?
Mm. Isn't it right up until the tournament starts, until you play your first game? I think the Men's World Cup...
Basically,
like
what
that.
We're trying to say is we've got no idea. Thanks for dropping us
in. No, I think the Men's World Cup, you could name your squad right up until your first game, like 2 hours before your first game.
We'll check for you, Andrew.
Well, people might be interested.
Now,
hopefully they might not be.
Ante Milicic is going to have a busy next 15 months because he was announced today as the inaugural coach of the MacArthur Bulls, who won't enter the A-League next season but the season after. So after he's finished with the Matildas at the Tokyo Olympics, which is about mid-August, he'll then switch his attention to the MacArthur Bulls, who will make their start in the competition in about October of 2020. What do you make of that?
But he's... Obviously, when you're starting up and you've got to get a squad of 23 or whatever or more for MacArthur, a lot of his attention is going to be on that, obviously.
Well, he does have assistant coaches.
So he'll delegate. And
we do remember that Gus Hiddink, in fact, coached the Socceroos and PSV at the same time when he was looking after the Socceroos in 2005-06.
Yeah. Starting up a new franchise and doing the Matildas is... two pretty high-profile gigs. I wish him well, and you've got to have the right people around you to delegate responsibilities.
Are you surprised that he was locked in so early, Harps?
Yeah, people do make their decisions and run their own business, but I'm with Speedy, I think, on this one, if I'm hearing Speedy right. I'm not completely comfortable with people doing two jobs at once, but particularly two jobs so divergent as these two. I mean, the women's national team and a start-up men's professional team. So, I mean, whose master does he serve? And they've obviously thought about it and discussed it, and if they're comfortable with it, they can believe they can get through it. Good on them. But
that's probably more for the purpose of if you're trying to sign players, which I'm sure they'll be needing to do very shortly, that at least the players know who the coach is going to be.
Yeah, well, equally, it hasn't stopped Western United.
You don't know who the coach of Western United is going to be, Hubs?
Well, they've still not said.
Are you the only person in Australian football who doesn't know that? Now, Speedy.
We've always heard about Ante Milicic also having this Croatian base and a yearning and want to be there. Have you heard?
He's been living there, yeah.
Yeah, you're out the launch today. Has he given up on that?
That I do not know, but I think he's still living in Croatia, yeah.
Wouldn't he have to be based in Australia now full time? Don't you think?
Just to do these two
jobs? To do these two jobs?
I don't know. I don't know what his personal situation is, but if that's the case, I'm sure he'll be moving back to Australia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a question that surely would be asked by journalists, I would have thought.
Now, we started the last show, Speedy, with you singing You'll Never Walk Alone in the background of my introduction. Did you notice that I was quite reserved when it
came to
talking
about
it? That
was the day of.
Well, so I've had 7 days to get over. Can I honestly tell you, I watched a replay last night of Spurs versus Ajax, the second leg from Spurs TV, because I just wanted to watch it with some biased commentary. It was very, very good.
What song do you sing?
Oh, well, it's probably When the Spurs Go Marching In.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as iconic.
Yeah.
But what, are you just trying to win an argument about who's got the best song?
No, I was just curious.
Liverpool versus Spurs on June the 1st. Speedy, are you confident of you some silverware there after missing out in the Premier League?
Well, Pochettino's a non-winner, very confident.
As is Klopp in big games.
What, won Bundesliga titles?
As is Klopp in cup competitions, yes.
He'll be right. He'll be right.
Yeah, okay. I think we'll be right too. And, of course, Liverpool just getting edged out. Did you get excited for what was it? 20 minutes, I think it was, when you
one
were in
minute.
Front. No, it was only... No, it was 20 minutes on top of the table.
1 minute Brighton were in front.
One minute Brighton were in front.
Yeah, I got excited there and hoped Matt Ryan might be able to keep out Aguero.
Did you really get excited or were you like, come on?
No, I thought Brighton have been able to close out their fair share of clean sheets under Matty Ryan in goal. And I thought maybe, just maybe, City were a little bit off and... And Glenn Murray's the kind of guy that can pop up with a goal or two on their home patch. But, yeah, unfortunately, Ryan was left high and dry by his defence and Aguero put one through his legs and it was all over from there on.
So the only team to lead at Christmas and then not go on to win the Premier League title has happened three times recently, all three by Liverpool. So does that make you just perennial bottlers?
They got the yips.
Yeah, you'd say so. That's a fair shout.
Oh, come on. I was expecting an argument there and you've just conceded.
He's crooked, Muzz. He's obviously crooked.
Yeah, he's not well. And he needs to rest up for the weekend.
Are you going to give any acknowledgement to Socceroos captain Mille Jedinek for his one-touch penalty?
What about that?
Comes on.
When did he come on, 120th?
He came on with, I watched it, he came on, I think, with a minute and a half to go in extra time.
And did the commentators bring up that Brenton speed point saying that why can't they just wait until the full-time whistle and then make a substitution if they got one more up their sleeve?
They actually credited Brenton speed. They mentioned Speedy by name.
They did actually. They said many would have heard about Brenton speed. He's the guy who...
who Martin Tyler loves.
No joke. This is the last minute of the...
No, I was watching, so I can verify.
You might know this guy. He's the guy who got IFAB to change their rule on the goal kick.
Yeah,
he did say that in commentary.
Yeah. I think they called you the one and only Brenton Speed.
Actually, what he did say was he did acknowledge Mille Jedinek's impeccable and stirring penalties for Australia.
And his impeccable beard, which has gone to another level, I noticed. A bit of tinge of grey to it, but just beautifully crafted. Anyway, Mille Jedinek and Aston Villa are through to Wembley, where they will face the winner of the other semi-final between Leeds and Derby. And I guess there's a lot of people that just want to see Villa play Leeds again, given what happened last time they clashed. Now, this weekend, Sunday, Perth Glory versus Sydney FC, the Hyundai A-League Grand Final. We're on air from 5:30 Australian Eastern, which is 3:30 in the West. Kickoff is at 6:30 Australian Eastern, which is 4:30 in the West. We're hearing that there could be a crowd anywhere close to 60,000 people, so it's going to be a great spectacle.
Now, and any treats in that pre-game show that you can just tease the viewers with?
Well, we'll have goals of the year again. Huh? So, Eric Boatiak won goal of the year at the Dolan Warren Awards.
Won't necessarily win it for Fox. Have you done your votes yet?
Yeah, we've done our votes.
I didn't get invited?
You were away yesterday, otherwise you would have been invited. You were crook at home.
Okay.
Right, tips. This is one that we've been looking forward to. Perth versus Sydney on Sunday. Brenton Speed, how's it play out? Give us your tip, your score. Should we give a Joe Marston medalist as well?
Okay. Let's do
remembering
that.
What Andy Harper said.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that Sydney FC favourites after last week, but I'm going to stick with my pre-season prediction. I'm going to go Perth Glory to win the double, lift the toilet seat.
Yep.
And they'll do it how? Perth 2.
Good to see you put some thought into
it. Sydney FC 2. And then after extra time, Perth Glory 3, Sydney FC 2. Diego Castro is your Joe Marston medalist.
Have you been copying what I've been writing here?
Murray Shaw, what's your tip?
Can I tell you, I have written here 2-2 after normal time with Lafondra and O'Neill scoring. O'Neill, of course, against his former side. And Economides and Keogh scoring for Perth. And then in the 119th minute, Diego Castro scoring Perth 3, Sydney 2.
Wow.
So you and I are on exactly the same wavelength. Wow. And did you say Castro for Joe Marston?
Yep.
I'll go Castro for Joe Marston as well.
Wow. Mm.
Andy Harper?
Yeah, well, I won't make it a hat trick, not because I don't want to. But I think Perth 2-1 normal time.
Yep.
And if anyone's going to break the defenders' stranglehold on, a relative stranglehold on the Marston medal, it would be a Diego Castro. But I'm going to tip Matt Sparanovic.
Wow.
Him or Shane Lowry. I'll just hedge my bets there because I think it's going to be a really tight game and defenders will cover themselves in glory. And I think Perth, I can't not back them because they were my pre-season tip and I'll stick with them.
I should say too, we didn't mention it when we were doing the preview, so overall they've played 43 times. Perth have won 9, Sydney have won 25. So this is a fixture really that Sydney have dominated. In Western Australia they've played 22 times, of which Sydney's won 11, Perth have won just 5. And I think it's something like Sydney have won 6 of the last 8 games between them. So it's been dominance from Sydney FC, but that... As they say in the classics, the form guide goes out the window.
Can you imagine Tony Popovich losing a fourth grand final?
No. I can't, which is why I tip Perth to win. All right. That's all we've got time for. Thank you, Brenton Speed. Enjoy the grand final.
Yes, I hope to enjoy it. I hope to be watching it somewhere.
I hope you're a bit better than you are today. Thank you, Andy Harper. Enjoy calling the grand final.
Thanks, mate. Is that it for the fun ship this year?
No, we're going to come back next week.
Oh, we're docking again next year, next week.
Yep. Yeah, so but all we've got time for this week. So Daniel Garb and Simon Hill will be back on Tuesday for the flagship because they've got to make their way back from Perth and won't do it in time for the regular Monday slot. And we'll be back next week probably on Thursday because you two have Champions League commitments. But for the moment, that's all we've got time for. Enjoy the grand final. Bye for now.
You made it, Speedy.